Okay, amazing. Great. Okay, so I wanted to start by explaining the title for this series, which is Chesed for the Super Busy, Super Stressed Superwoman, because I just wanted to put it out there right from the beginning. Like, I believe we're all super busy, and I believe we all have a lot on our plates. I also believe we're all super women, and we're doing amazing things. I told my husband, I said, I want to give a shiur about chesed because I'm really excited about it, but I wouldn't go to a shiur about chesed if I saw it advertised somewhere else because, to be really honest, you know, super busy, super stressed, and I feel like if I'm going to take out time to go to a shiur, I already believe in chesed, and, you know, I'm already trying to do chesed, so I would maybe go to a shiur about a topic that I know nothing about, but, like, why would I prioritize going to a shiur about chesed? So I said, how do I name it in a way that, like, kind of says, like, this is the shiur about chesed for people who don't have time to go to shiur about chesed? So that's how I came up with this title. The point of this shiur is, number one, not to make anybody more busy or more stressed. So we're not here to make anybody feel like they have to add extra things onto their plate, or to sell anybody on chesed. You know, you're all here. I just told you I wouldn't come to shiur about chesed. So I think you're probably all, like, you know, more into chesed than I am just by the fact that you're here. I'm not going to try to convince you about anything. But instead, the goal of this shiur is twofold. First of all, to celebrate the chesed that we're already doing, because I think that it gets hard sometimes. Like, just, you know, the day in, day out, we're all giving to our families and giving to our friends and giving to our communities and giving at our jobs, and it could be exhausting, and it sometimes feels like, you know, why am I doing this? And sometimes we feel like other people are, like, looking at us like we're crazy. Why are you doing that? So number one, to remind ourselves why we're doing what we're doing and why it's important, and to celebrate that. And number two, to try to inspire each other. I don't consider myself an expert. I hope that you'll share also what works for you, but that we can all inspire each other to grow in chesed in ways that both are realistic, that we feel like we can easily incorporate into our lives, and in ways that are strengthening and energizing. So the goal is for chesed to not deplete us, and to not, you know, we've all had those moments where, like, we do what we thought was right, and then afterwards we feel resentful about it. So the goal is to try to do chesed, try to think about ways that we could do chesed in ways that make us feel really good and make us feel energized and make us feel like we can do even more. So that's the goal. And I think a couple people in the room were at a shiur that I gave over the summer about chesed at Yarchikala. I'm not going to repeat that shiur, although it's definitely related if anybody wants to listen to it, but my challenge for that shiur was trying to take everything that I wanted to say and pare it down to 45 minutes. So when Rabbi Brand asked me if I would give a series, I said, I really want to talk about chesed, and I hope that we'll really be able to get into it and make it very practical so that hopefully after these 3 weeks we can all feel like, you know, this is realistic for us, and we have practical strategies how to grow in chesed. Okay. I was going to pick different chesed role models every week, and then I started with Henny Machlis, and I thought, I could just go with Henny Machlis forever. So we're gonna stick with Henny Machlis. She's going to be kind of our compass as we're striving to grow in chesed. Just by a raise of hands, who is familiar with Henny Machlis? Okay, some people. Has anybody read this book? Emuna with Love and Chicken Soup. Yeah. Okay, so I never met Henny Machlis. I never went to the Machlis home. But I read this book. Thank you, Talia, my sister, who lent it to me. And it really inspired me. I'm going to be weaving in some stories from the book over the next few weeks, but I highly recommend that everybody reads it. Henny Machlis is a role model not only for chesed, but for a lot of things. So I just found this book to be incredibly inspiring, so I'm making a plug for the book. Okay, but to get us all on the same page about who Henny Machlis was, because we have various levels of familiarity in the room. I wanted to start with this tribute that was posted on H.com a few years ago. And it's written by the same woman, Sari Yocheved Rigler, the same woman who wrote the biography. I, of course, when I was practicing for this year, I couldn't get through the article without crying, so I'm wondering if we could have volunteers who can be brave. Maybe we'll just, like, switch off paragraphs and I'll shift the mic around. Can we do that?
Do you want us to cry?
If you can cry, that would be ideal, but, you know. I'm also, like, selfishly, I already taught this morning, so I'm, like, you know, trying a little bit to preserve my voice. But who feels comfortable reading?
I can.
Yeah? Great. Let me just move the mic closer to you.
Okay.
Maybe. Do you want to do the first side and then we'll switch to somebody else?
Okay.
Henny Mach was a truly great Jewish woman. How did an ordinary Jew from Brooklyn become one of the greatest lights of our times? In honor of Henny Machlis' second Yahrzeit this week, H.com is featuring this article. What qualified Henny Machlis, who passed away this past Friday at the age of 57, as one of the world's greatest Jewish women? Jerusalemites would say it was her cooking for and serving up to 300 guests every Shabbos in her cramped Jerusalem apartment. The guests, almost 150 for the Shabbat night meal and over 100 for the Shabbat day meal, ranged from curious tourists and university students to lonely widows and singles to drunks and mentally ill people who considered the Machlis family's love and warmth more delectable than even their ample food. Henny cooked 51 weeks a year, except only for the week of Pesach, from her tiny kitchen. Starting as newlyweds 35 years ago, the Machlis' open Shabbos table expanded gradually over the years until the overflow of guests had to be seated in the courtyard and outside the front door. Henny's great dream was to enclose the courtyard so guests could sit there even in the winter. Alas, she never lived to see her dream's fulfillment. The Machlis' chesed was not restricted to Shabbat. Homeless people slept on their couches, some for weeks at a time, and those whose mental instability might have endangered the Machlis' 14 children were accommodated in the family van. When Rabbi Mordechai Machlis would leave for work as a teacher in the mornings, he would know how many van guests he had by the number of shoes in the windshield. For those who would gauge greatness by the level of selflessness a person attains, Henny also scored off the charts. At her funeral, her oldest son Moshe recalled how, after he got married and moved away to start Kollel, full-time Torah learning, his mother encouraged him, "If you ever aren't making it financially, tell me and I'll sell my jewelry." "Ima," Moshe called out in a tearful voice, "you forgot that you didn't have any jewelry. They had all been stolen by the guests over the years. And your diamond ring, you loaned it to someone 20 years ago and never got it back." Being treated for cancer in New York's Sloan Kettering, Henny was sometimes visited by the unfortunates who, even those decades older than she, considered Henny their mother. When one homeless woman came to visit, Henny gave her bed. A relative discovered Henny wrapped in a hospital blanket, wandering in the hospital corridor looking for a place to lie down. Henny's son Moshe was pushed aside at the crowded funeral by one of the Machlis' mentally ill regular guests who proclaimed, "I have to get closer, she's my mother." For those who equate spiritual greatness with God consciousness, with the ability to see God's hand always and everywhere, Henny had indeed achieved those spiritual heights. At the funeral, a tearful Rabbi Machlis related just one story. He invited a destitute man whom he always saw at the Kotel, Western Wall, to come home with him to eat. That day, Henny served her homemade whole wheat pizza. The man loved it. He came back to their house every day, asking for a slice of whole wheat pizza. Finally, Henny suggested that she could teach him how to make whole wheat pizza himself. Painstakingly and with infinite patience, Henny taught him how. One night, several days later, at 3 a.m., there was a knock on the door. "Not on the front door," Rabbi Machlis related. "Our front door is always unlocked. Someone was knocking on our bedroom door." The loud knocking woke them up. Alarmed at what must be an emergency, Rabbi Machlis went to the door and asked, "Who's there?" When the man identified himself, Rabbi Machlis asked, "What's wrong?" The man replied, "I forgot how to make holy pizza. I need your wife to explain it to me again." Rabbi Machlis was exasperated. "At 3 o'clock in the morning, you need to remember how to make holy pizza?" But Henny calmed him down. "It's a test," she assured him. "It's from Hashem." Then Henny reiterated to the man, step by step, how to make whole wheat pizza. Should I keep going? For me personally, the sign of Henny Machlis' greatness was the radiant joy she emanated all the time. Whenever I ran into her, her wide smile and the joyful light she radiated conveyed that seeing me was the best thing that had happened to her all day. And although I knew that she greeted everyone the same way, I nonetheless was charged by this encounter with a holiness and saintliness that lit up the world, or that tiny piece of the world where Henny Mopla stood. The last time I saw Henny was several months ago, when she was briefly back in Jerusalem between surgeries and treatments at Sloan Kettering. She had already been battling metastasized cancer for a couple agonizing years. I decided to drop in at her house and brace myself to see the battle-weary and fear-worn look that characterized other cancer patients I had known. On the path to the Machlis house, there was Henny with one of her daughters on her way to go pray at the grave of the Tzadik Rav Asher. When she saw me, she gave me the same radiant smile and jubilant greeting that had always been her trademark. Unmitigated by the cancer, the surgeries, the chemo, the long separations from her family, and the unexpected and unwanted turn her life had taken. Her joyful smile conveyed not just her stoic acceptance, but her happy acquiescence with the way God was running his world. A mutual friend told me after Henny's death, when I was with her, I felt embraced by God. The question, indeed the challenge, of Henny's life is, how did an ordinary Jew, born to a regular middle-class family in Brooklyn in 1957, become so great? Like the rest of us, she went to college. She graduated Stern College with a BS in education. Like most of us in our 20s, she had an ideal. Hers was to share the beauty and joy of Shabbos with the whole world. Like most of us, reality intruded in the actualization of the ideal. For the Machlises, the tremendous scale of their success cost them over $2,500 every Shabbat, a financial load that defied Rabbi Machlis's modest salary as a teacher, supplemented by donations from well-wishers. But unlike most of us, their adamantine faith in God and love for the Jewish people kept them from compromising on their ideal. They mortgaged their apartment to the hilt, took out personal and bank loans, and kept on going. As Henny once told me, we are living in the midst of a spiritual holocaust. Most Jews today have no idea of the beauty and depth of Judaism. How can we not do everything in our power, including going into debt, to reach out to our fellow Jews? The only difference between Henny Machlis and the rest of us is the voice that asserts, I've done enough. I don't have to do more. Henny never hearkened to that voice. She kept on going and giving and loving and inspiring until last Friday when she was called to her heavenly reward. Now it's up to the rest of us. Hard with a mask.
I hear you. Sorry, I should have asked if you wanted to switch in the middle. Thank you for doing that. Okay, so I used to have a lot of trouble reading stories like this of just giants, Jewish giants. But my rebbeim in Mechlala, the seminary where I went, they really encouraged us to view those stories as not as a destination that you want to reach, but as a compass. A compass pointing you in the right direction. So, you know, if we think, like, what would Henny do in this situation? And then if I could do Henny minus 100, you know, I'm at least going in the right direction, which I think is no small thing, because first of all, you know, when I go to Shemayim at the end of my life, you know, they're not going to ask me, were you Henny Machlis? They're going to ask me, were you Aliza Rosenbaum, right? So if I'm stretching myself and I'm growing from where I am, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And secondly, you know, she says, now it's up to the rest of us. Like, Henny inspired, you know, probably tens of thousands of people, I don't know, maybe more. You know, if 10,000 people do Henny minus 100, we can accomplish a lot. You know, maybe more than Henny herself could do as one person. So I wanted us to kind of have that example in mind as we're striving in Chesed and view this as a direction to go in. So just from the article, or those of you who know more about Henny Machlis, what are some things that inspire you, that make you feel like that's a direction I would want to go in?
Although sometimes it seemed like it was to a fault. Like she said, you know, we'll go into debt. Like, there's no problem with going into debt if it means helping a fellow Jew. So, selflessness in one regard, but also that might also not be, the way to always go about doing the chesed. Like, she also needs to look after herself.
Right.
You know?
Which is one of the things that it talks about in the book, is how she was always working on herself and always growing. And one of the things toward the end of her life that she realized she needed to work on more was taking care of herself. Mm-hmm. But yeah, selflessness is a value, and we'll talk more about that I think next week, you know, we're each different, and I think her limit was really extreme. You know, she didn't need a lot for herself. And when she did take time for herself, she was like, I really need some self-care. Like, I'm going to go to, like, the gravesite of a tzaddik just and daven for, like, an hour. That was her self-care. So, you know, but we each need different things and we each need different amounts. But something to strive toward as, you know, how can we grow in the amount of time and the extent that we can give to other people? Yeah.
I feel like for her there was no, like, it sounds like, from I have not heard of her before reading this, but it sounds like there was no. It was yes to everything. And I feel like that is impractical to our lives. And, you know, I feel like what you said earlier, like when this year started, about finding the things that we can do or that fit in within our lives, like, that's something that I sometimes struggle with, because there are certain things that for me are super easy for me to do, and I'm happy to do them whenever they come up, and it's fine. And there are other things that are significantly harder for me to do. Like, there are lots of people in the community who can easily make a meal for someone, and I don't like cooking, and it's a huge challenge, so I'll do it sometimes, but it's not like something I rush to. But I feel like that, I feel like it's not, like, when you do something that is not hard for you, it's not as meaningful as something that is hard for you. Mm. And it just sounds like for her, she just did everything, like, easy enough.
Yeah. There was a, I forgot if I put it in here. I don't think I put it in. But there was a quote from her journal that she wrote to herself, which was, don't do what you can, do more than you can. Which I think we'll talk about that more next week, because next week is about stretching ourselves. But it's hard to, you know, we have to try to strike that balance of, yeah, we have the things that are easy for us, and that's great, and we should do those things also. One of the things we talked about in the Shira in the summer was about, like, having, like, your chesed specialty. Like, everybody has things that they love to do and are really happy to do. So, great, like, have those be your go-to things, and, you know, some people are happy to cook a meal. So, you know, if we each do the things that we're good at and happy to do, then we work together as a community, and we can, you know, hopefully cover all the bases. But there is a sense of meaningfulness to, you know, there is something special about being like, I stretched myself and I did something that was out of my comfort zone. I did something that was hard for me, which is, I think, part of why we're here, is to, you know, try to do those things that are hard for us, and that's how we grow. But there's an area between what's easy for us and what's beyond us, and I think that's the area where we have to find where that place is. That's where really what we're going to focus on next week. So. To be continued on that point. But yeah, the idea that Hani Machlis always said yes, I think she said yes a lot, but I think she also looked for ways to say yes. Again, her limits are probably not going to be realistic for most of us, but, you know, when she saw somebody suffering and homeless and wanted to invite them into her home but felt like it was dangerous for her kids, so you saw it from the article, so they stayed in the car, they slept in the car. You know, so the way that I would translate that to me, Hani minus 100, what can I do, is, you know, if I see somebody in need and I want to help, but I feel like I can't do what that person needs, so I think, you know, what can I do? Like, what would be Hani minus 100? My husband, a few years ago, befriended a homeless person in the community, my husband is a lovely person. I don't know that I could do the things that he's done for this person, but we knew that he needed a place to live. And I said, I'm just not comfortable. Like, I'm not comfortable with him living in our house. But I wasn't comfortable saying no. Like, I wanted to do something. So I said, does he need a place for his stuff while he's looking? We can put his stuff in our garage. And it was like a tiny, tiny thing. Like, it wasn't scratching the surface of what this person needed, but I felt like, this is what I can say yes to. And maybe next time I can, you know, find a different creative way to say yes, and maybe I can do a little more, you know. But that's something that I learned from Henny, was, you know, how can I find a creative way to help that's within what I feel comfortable with? Anything else strike you, inspire you, bother you?
I
Yeah.
About her own subject?
Yeah. Which, by the way, is going to be the focus of the third part of this year. But it's good for me also to get ideas now, because then I'll know what to focus on.
I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
On the bothering topic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. On the what's anything bothering you about this? There's a lot bothering me about it. Putting strangers' needs above their children's needs. Stretching yourself. That amount of energy that she showed every single day, I don't know where that came from, but I don't have that level of energy. And I see us as working on the Ben Adam LeMakom and also the Ben Adam LeChavero, but also to oneself. And some of my children have commented on that third category of, it's also something to work on. Oneself and not just giving as the main focus in life. I don't know. So that's what's going through my mind when you bring this up, that there are a lot of things to juggle, your own yourself, your own family, your own health, besides the 1,500 people out there.
Right, who are still coming, by the way, to the machlises, even though Henny is no longer there. You should read the book. Everybody should read the book because a lot of those things are addressed, particularly. Henny had all the energy.
But she didn't. I mean, so I read the book.
Yeah.
And I read it a lot. And I think everybody should read the book. And I think what your first question, what I was going to say is, it seems from the outside looking in that she just jumped with ease at every opportunity to help people. But she keeps this journal throughout the book, and no one would ever guess that she really was such a critic of herself, and she felt like one mida that she was constantly having to work on was anger. And to her, that was really anger, but to anybody looking at her would be like, that's not anger. You have all this patience, you have all this tolerance. But she was, she really did work on herself, and I don't think she saw herself the way others see her. If she would have been around to read this book about her, I wonder what she would have thought. Probably would not have wanted a book to be written about her at all. But she looked at herself as somebody with a lot of flaws. She didn't, I don't think she, so when you say that, what resonates with you in the book, it's easy for us to read the book and say, wow, this was so easy for her. I don't know that it was so easy for her, but that she was extremely committed. This is just how she lived her life. But I don't think it was easy.
Can you give a bit of backstory, how she's started doing this? I did not know her of her before this, but how did she become who she was?
So the book goes through a detailed history, but she was just a regular person growing up in Brooklyn, and she grew up in a family that had very strong Jewish values and had a strong value for chesed, but she was an incredibly idealistic person, and she wanted to have a lot of children, particularly after she took a trip to Israel. I think she was a teenager, and she went to
Har Herzl.
Thank you. She went to Har Herzl and saw all the soldiers who are buried there and the tremendous, cost of building Israel. And she said, how are we going to ever recover the lives lost? And she said, we each have a responsibility. And she believed very much in everybody should have as many kids as they can. And there's a whole chapter about that in the book. She wanted to have a lot of children, and she wanted to bring the light of Torah to the entire world. And she just dreamed big. But she did grow gradually, and she did struggle. And her kids even talk about, and it's written about in the book, her kids even talk about how they remember how their mother used to yell a lot more, and how she worked on that, and how she improved in that, and how her mother would, divulge that she struggled with judgment of other people, even though she let all different types of people into her home and seemed to have no judgment. But she would say, like, you know, this person came and they did this, and I couldn't understand it. Why would you do that? That's so inconsiderate. But then I thought, you know, she probably just, like, really needs love. And then I thought, but how could she do that? But then I thought she just needs a hug, and then I gave her a hug. And, you know, like, she was really just a regular person who dreamed big and tried to live her life by her values and grew gradually. She had a lot of role models, which it talks about in the book, and you know, went to classes and was part of, like, you know, Vadim, to, you know, work on yourself and grow as a person. And on the one hand, seeing her as such a normal person, I think it was helpful for me to say, like, you don't have to be, you know, born into you know, a really, you know, big rabbinic family, or, like, you know, you don't have to be, like, a super person who's, you know, a genius for the time that you were three, or, you know, like, you could just be a regular person and accomplish a lot. But at the same time, there was obviously something very special about her, and I don't think, I used to feel very bothered and threatened by this type of literature, and then I got to a place where I just thought, it's not telling you that I have to do this. It's just, you know, it's a compass. It's a direction to move toward in the way that's right for me, in the way that is consistent with the person that I am and who I'm supposed to be. But hold on to those things that are bothering you, because that's what I really want to unpack in the third shear of our series. Thank you.
I have one more.
Sure.
Not bother. Thing that I noticed. It talked about how she greeted everyone and how she made everyone feel like they were so special and they made her day more better by seeing them. And I think that goes back to something that's, like, so easy to do. Like, that is not hard. And I like it. I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. And I think there's a lot of things like that we can be like, ooh, I could do that. Rabbi Machlis, like, recorded a message if anybody called, and if they didn't even answer, right? So it takes no effort to not answer the phone when somebody called. But the recorded message was this long, like, thank you so much for calling. I hope you're having a great day. I want to wish you everything good, and you should have all these brachas. And, like, that was the recording. So, yeah, like, you know, who can't record that message on their phone? Actually, I don't know how to record a message on my phone, but I could probably figure it out. Okay. So let's start with, now that we know what the goal of the shiur is, we know who Hani Machlis is, I want to start with just why are we doing the chesed that we're doing, and just reminding ourselves. I definitely have these moments where I'm like, why am I doing this? Why is this important? So I want to start with that, and I feel like my mother gave the perfect segue, because she talks about the importance of balance, right? We can't only be giving. And, of course, the Mishnah, famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, yes, chesed is one pillar that the world stands on, right? The world can't exist if we don't give to each other. But that is only one of the pillars. And the other two pillars are, oh, I'm sorry, this is the second source. We'll go back to the first source in a minute. The second source is from Pirkei Avot. And it says, Shimon Atzadik Haya Mishayarei Knesset Agdola. Shimon the righteous was one of the last men of the great assembly. Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, Al Shoshad Dvarim Ha'olam Omid. The world stands on three things, three pillars. Al HaTorah V'al HaAvodah V'al Gemilu Chesedim. The world stands on the pillar of Torah, which we can think about as that's our relationship with God, right? What's our channel to develop our relationship with God? Is through Torah. Through learning Torah, through performance of mitzvot. V'al HaAvodah, and on here it translates it as the temple service, but avodah is really more than the temple service, because temple service doesn't, you know, is not relevant for us, unfortunately, nowadays. So nowadays we have davening, right? That's our avodah. We can pray, and instead of thinking about prayer as our connection to God, I would suggest that prayer is really more about our connection to ourselves. And, you know, the word tefillah, lehit palel, to daven, to pray, means, literally, it means to introspect, to examine ourselves. So prayer is really about taking the time in our day to check in with ourselves, and what are my values, and what are my priorities, and what do I want to take stock of right now? What do I want to What am I grateful for? What am I looking for? What are my goals in life? So that's prayer, right? So we have Torah, which is our relationship with God. We have Avoda, which represents our relationship with ourselves. And we have Gmilut Chesedim, acts of loving kindness. I don't like any of the translations for Chesed. I feel like if I say Chesed, that has a lot more meaning to everybody than acts of loving kindness. Actually, the translation from Sefari was acts of piety, which I thought was even worse. Like, it makes me feel like I have to be like super pious to do Chesed. But I think we all do Chesed, right? Acts of loving kindness. So we have these three pillars, and the world is not going to be stable if these three pillars are not solid, right? So I don't want to disregard Torah and Avoda; those are important, but that would be a topic for a different year. But if our pillar of Chesed is not solid, then the world is not going to be stable, and we know that the world could probably use a little bit more acts of loving kindness, right? Like to strengthen the world a little bit. But we also, each of us, is our own world. And I'm not going to feel, well-calibrated if I don't have a good balance of these three relationships and of my relationship with myself, my relationship with Hashem, and my relationship with other people. And Chesed is a big part of that. So I want to start with the fact that every time we smile at somebody or every time we, ask somebody how they're doing, every act of Chesed that we do, we're sustaining the world. We're sustaining the entire world. The sparks that we send out there of positivity and of kindness are, they have ripple effects throughout the world. We're sustaining our own world and making sure that we have the right balance in our lives, and we're sustaining another person who's a world as well. So we should, I think we need to try to remind ourselves of that every time we do that act of Chesed. The Pasuk in Tehillim, which is the first source here under number three, why Chesed? The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, which there are a lot of different ways to understand it. Here it translates it, I think this was, I don't remember now which translation this was, Sefari, Mechon Ramei, I'm not sure, as Chesed will be built forever, because the word Olam could mean forever. But another way to understand that is the world, Olam means the world, will be built through Chesed. And the world was built through, God created the world for the purpose of Chesed, right? He was self-sufficient, but he said, I want to give, so I'm going to create this world that I could give to. And the world can only exist through Chesed. And this is something that my sister Shira pointed out to me, that like the entire ecosystem, everything is dependent on each other. God didn't have to make it that way. Everything could have been self-sufficient, but it's like God is saying, like, this is how it's supposed to be. I built this into the world, and we are supposed to be interdependent on each other. Chesed makes the world go round. So another thing, for us to remember when we're doing those acts of Chesed, this is the way that it's supposed to be. I think also, I don't want to get into this too much, maybe we'll talk about it more another week, but I think we sometimes have a hard time being takers. And that's also important to remember. Like, we're all in this together, and we're not meant to be an island. We're meant to lean on each other. So that's part of this being a world of Chesed as well. One more Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that just helps me personally, and it's like hard to pick the Jewish sources about Chesed, because there's like you can't separate Judaism from Chesed. It's just everywhere. But these are just some things that are personally meaningful to me. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avot says, "Hu haya omer Hillel also used to say, 'Im ein ani li mi li.' If I'm not for myself, who will be for me? If I don't take care of myself physically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, if I don't care for myself, who's going to care for me?" Right? And we all have that responsibility of self-care. And at the same time, uchshani latzmi, but if it's all about me, if I'm all about self-care all the time, ma'ani, then what is my life about? Right? We need to fuel ourselves so that we can contribute, so that we can give, but we have to also be honest with ourselves. Like, how much do I really need of that? And I also want just feel for myself, and I think it's true for everybody on some level, that Chesed is the ultimate self-care. When I feel like I'm contributing to the world and I'm doing something meaningful with my life, there's no greater energizing feeling than that. I know when I'm feeling down, like, I could go to Park Plaza and I could talk with the old people who sit outside, or I could, like, climb in bed and binge watch Netflix, And I'm going to feel good after the first option, and I'm going to feel bad after the second option. You know, so sometimes we do need those moments. You know, sometimes, you know, we're exhausted, and we just need to, like, you know, collapse, and that's legitimate. But there are times that if we're really honest with ourselves, the greater self-care is going to be the feeling of giving. And these are just, this is a quote from Henny's journal. When we do chesed, we bring more chesed into the world. Which I try to think about a lot with my kids. And I think anytime we have those people that are sometimes, you know, difficult to give to, but we're giving to them anyway. You know, like, we all have those moments where we're like, I could do this resentfully, or I could do this graciously. Like, I think about it, that at work all the time, where I'm like, I'm going to be doing this anyway. So I could either make a conscious choice to do it with a smile, or I could, you know, do it begrudgingly. So this is something that really helps me in those situations. Like, I am bringing more chesed into the world. I am when I practice patience, I bring more patience into the world. You know, whatever we practice, we bring more of that into the world. And, you know, it's like Hashem, that, like, it's like the places in Shemayim that Hashem can shower us with those same attributes are more open when we practice them. So, of course, we should be selfless givers and give for other people. But at the same time, we're getting a lot out of it, I think, for ourselves. So these are just a few things that I try to remember when I'm feeling like I need a little chesed boost. You know, I'm upholding the world. I'm sustaining myself. I'm sustaining another human being. I'm bringing more chesed into the world. Like, what greater thing to be doing? Yeah.
I tell my kids sometimes, we don't do what's easy or what we want to do. We do what's the right thing to do. And sometimes it's not. They're not the same. Sometimes what the right thing isn't the easy thing or the fun thing. Sometimes the right thing is a little harder or not so fun.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Okay, so I'm going to try to, I just try to think, like, what would be meaningful to me in this year. So I always want something practical at the end. So I'm going to suggest every week that we're together a mantra of the week and a mission of the week. There is no pressure. I'm not going to grade your homework. Nobody has to share if they don't want to, although if you want to share next time, you totally can. So a mantra of the week is just a mantra that I try to play in my own head that I found helpful. And the mission of the week is something that we can all, if you want, you can try to keep in mind for this week and you know, try to see how it works for you. Try it on for size. And if you want to share how it went next week, successes, challenges, feel free. So my mantra of the week is what an opportunity. Because the shiur today is about celebrating what we're already doing and looking just for those opportunities that are already knocking on my door. So the example that I gave in this year, this summer, is just my favorite example because it's literally about a knock at the door, is when Mishulachim come to my door, and people come collecting money, right? So I used to, like, hate it, and it always felt like it was the worst time, and I felt so uncomfortable with it, and how do I even know if this person is safe or legitimate, or, right? I had all these questions. But then I started to think, chesed is literally knocking at my door, right? And I want to do chesed. I want to be a giver. And I want to show my children that I'm being a giver. And I want to help. These are people who need help. Nobody wants to be knocking on somebody else's door. So I started to just think, what an opportunity. Like, how could I pass up this opportunity and turn off all my lights and pretend I'm not home? Like, how could I? God is literally putting it in my lap. How can I say no to this opportunity? And I started to, you know, look at the ways that I feel comfortable saying yes to that. And there's a lot of, when I started to think, what an opportunity, I noticed this everywhere. My 10-year-old son, he's so cute and sweet, and I'm sure that when I'm older, I'm going to regret that I didn't do this more, but he wants to read with me every night, which is so nice. But I'm like, I just read to all your siblings and tucked them all in, and I just had my whole day, and I'm done. Like, this is my time. I want to go to sleep soon. And, you know, this is like when I do my things that I have to do. And you know how to read and you're 10, so put yourself to sleep. Which is legitimate. And sometimes I think that's what I need to say and that's what I say. But I also just started saying, like, what an opportunity. Like, I'm sure there's going to be a day where I'm like, I wish he would still ask me to read with him. Like, I wish we still had those moments, you know? And what an opportunity to connect with another person, and I don't like the same types of books that he likes. He's really into fantasy. It's not my thing. What an opportunity to stretch myself a little and think and talk to him about, like, what do you like about this book and what do you think about the characters? And an opportunity to connect with him and help him, and an opportunity for me to grow in such a meaningful way. What an opportunity. So it encourages me to take that opportunity a little bit more often. What are those things that are happening anyway in our lives? First of all, what are the things that we're doing already, but that maybe we can do them with a little bit more, you know, positivity and think like, wow, this is really great what I'm doing. I'm really sustaining the world right now. I really want to celebrate this. And secondly, what are the things I talked about in the summer as Pokemon Go, if anybody's familiar with Pokemon Go. I've never played it, but from what I understand, there are these Pokemon guys hiding everywhere in the world around us, right? And if you download this app onto your phone and you hold up your phone all around you, you could see these Pokemon guys everywhere and you can get them, and then you have a Pokemon guy. So I said, like, there are these chesed opportunities everywhere in the world around us. And if we just download the app, if we just download the right mindset to think, like, when I go outside, instead of just being like, oh, it's gray outside, another day and another drive to work, like, maybe there will be a Pokemon guy on my way to work today, and maybe I'll get him, and then I'll add him to my collection. So there are these chesed opportunities everywhere around us, and if we could just be a little bit more aware of that person in need. You know, like, I walked into school the other day, and I had somewhere that I needed to be. I was going, you know, to visit a specific class, but there was a kid in the hallway crying. I'm like, I got, like, you know, I could just walk right by, but there's a kid in the hallway crying, so there is an opportunity. Like, maybe I can make a difference to that kid. Turned out he doesn't speak English. So I was glad that I decided to take that opportunity before I realized that, because otherwise I would have been like, oh, my Hebrew would have been so self-conscious. But then he's like, I'm a Deberity read, and I'm like, Ken. Then we had this whole conversation in Hebrew, and then I saw him again today, and he was like, oh, how are you? These opportunities are all around us, if we could just be a little bit more aware of it. So that's what I want to suggest for the week as a mantra, is what an opportunity, and thinking about what are those opportunities that we can recognize, and not in a way, next week we'll talk about stretching ourselves a little bit, not in a way of stretching ourselves, in a way that we really feel comfortable and happy to do, and celebrate the things that we're already doing. So that's the mission for the week. The mission for the week is to look for ways that, number one, we can celebrate the chesed that we're already doing and own it and, you know, pat ourselves on the back for it, and let that chesed really energize us and fuel more chesed. And secondly, celebrate the chesed opportunities that we find that maybe we wouldn't have noticed before, but to see those opportunities and say, what an opportunity. I don't want to pass that up. And that was from Henny's journal. She said, when Hashem loves you, he sends you a present, a guest to your door. I just think that's such a beautiful way to view it, as like, this is a gift. The opportunity to do chesed is such a gift. Imagine if we weren't able to do that, how sad that would be. Like, what a gift to be able to give to another person. Any thoughts about ways that could be practical for all of us to celebrate the chesed we're all already doing and find other opportunities? Are there things that you find that, like, come up in your life that are just like, yeah, like, let me grab that Pokemon Go? Yeah.
I was thinking about what Sigal said, that, like, maybe it's easy for you. I don't think it's equally easy for everyone to greet people with a smile. And I think one of the hardest things for me is greeting my kids with a smile at the end of the day when they come in and they, like, barge in and throw their backpacks everywhere and, like, throw their shoes everywhere and, you know, and start fighting with each other. But I was reading Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, recently, and she talks about how, like, parents should light up at the sight of their children, you know, instead of looking them up and down and saying, like, you know, your hair needs combing and, you know, and, like, what did you get on your test today? You know, like, every child deserves to have their parent light up at the sight of them. And, like, that's kind of something that's in our lap. You know, the people that we live with, the people who are in our family, I think it's sometimes challenging, but it's like we can reframe it as an opportunity that, you know, even if I'm not having any guests this Shabbos, like, you know, I have the people right in front of me who I can light up at or, like, be critical of or annoyed with.
Yeah, that's a great example. Right, we can't forget about the people who live with us. sometimes it's easier to do chesed for a stranger than, you know.
My sister, I was telling her, she doesn't live here, and I was telling her, and she actually ate a meal at Honey Machlis's when she lived in Israel for a year with her husband, and so I was telling her I was coming to this year, and I said, oh, I wish it was on Zoom, and I would share it with you, and she, you know, I was reading her about, like, the super stressed out superwoman, and she said, not that she learned from Hani Machlis, but I think she learned from someone else and what she tries to practice, and it's what you were both saying, is that chesed starts at home. And like what you said, sometimes it's easier to treat strangers with kindness and love and affection and warmth, and, you know, you turn around and you snap at your own family. So, like, in her perspective, she said, you know, when you're really busy and you can't cook for people and you can't go out of your way, like, you have to kind of just start within your own circle and within your own family and see, even there's all these opportunities, right, to, like, light up when you see your kids or to make time for your husband when he comes home. Like, that's chesed, too. I don't know that we always think of it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that we always celebrate that we're doing that day in and day out, because sometimes it's like, another day goes by, another set of dishes, another set, you know, like, and all the food that I just spent hours and hours making, like, is now gone. What happens to it? Like, this is amazing. Like, what more meaningful thing could I be doing than, you know, fueling the people that I love? I love those examples. Okay, I'm just going to end it with one story, which is not even, like, such a remarkable story for this book. But what's remarkable about it is that there are, like, 1,000 examples of this story in here. But this just, to me, was... what an opportunity. This is Avram Meir Levy's story. I was there one Shabbos night when the house was full. There must have been a couple hundred people there. In the middle of the Suda, there's a knock at the door. Someone outside says, we have a group of people who would like to come in, and the house is full. There's no more space. Rebbetzin Machlis says, bring them in! We figure 2 or 5 people, but when I open the door and look outside, it's like never ending. There are 50 people. It's summer, and there's a grassy area in front of the Machlis apartment, between the apartment blocks, and Rabbi Machlis says, you know what? I think we'll have the Suda outside. And Rebbetzin Machlis says to all of us who are already seated, we're all part of this mitzvah now. And we take all the tables outside and find some more tables, and it's as if nothing has happened. And they make all the people who are there already part of the mitzvah. He says, look what Hashem gave us, all of us, this opportunity to invite another 50 people. Rabbi and Rebbetzin Machlis, at least for me, were like Avram and Sarah Imenu. Which a lot of people say that about them, like Avram and Sarah Imenu.